the outlook for Maine's real estate market, and what it means for you. According to the Maine Association of Realtors, the number of homes sold in Maine set a record in 2016, up 12% from the year before. And it wasn't just an urban phenomenon. Home sales numbers were up in every county of the state. The big question now, will this continue, especially if mortgage interest rates go up? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the current real estate market in Maine and its impact on our economy. We're not only looking at home sales, but also commercial real estate and development trends. Anyone who's driven through Portland recently knows there is a lot of building going on. The real estate market and all its implications. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Last year was a really good year for Maine's real estate market, especially residential home sales. Was that a fluke or part of a trend? Today, we're going to discuss the outlook for Maine's commercial and real estate, residential real estate markets in the year ahead. We will also get tips on buying, selling, or refinancing your home. In the studio with me, Erin Cooper-Ryder. She's the Development Director at Community Housing of Maine. She also serves on the Board of Directors of the Maine Affordable Housing Coalition, the Board of Directors of CEI, and is currently the President of the Board of Directors at the Genesis Community Loan Fund. Paul Peck is President of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, an attorney with Drummond and Drummond, and a real estate developer. Is that right? Is that the name of your law firm?
Drummond and Drummond, yes, yeah, that is
okay.
Correct.
I thought I read that wrong. And David Marston is an associate broker with the Bean Group and specializes in residential, condominium, and multifamily properties. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about real estate and the outlook for 2017? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Paul, what trends are we seeing in the market?
We're seeing certainly a trend in the multifamily market. We've seen a lot of new construction in really the state of apartment buildings, multifamily units, a lot of affordable housing. And that's exciting because there hasn't been any really new construction of multifamilies in 20, 30 years.
Wow. And when you say new construction of multifamily units, if you're in Portland, you see it. You drive down Congress Street, drive along the waterfront, you see cranes and you see these big apartment buildings going up. Is it the same story throughout the state?
It is not. Construction costs are generally the same throughout the state other than land costs. So construction costs are very high. They've gone up maybe 20% in the last 2 years. And the only rents that really can afford those new construction costs are generally in the urban centers where people want to live. So Portland is at the forefront of that. Affordable housing, on the other hand, is being built all around the state in the urban centers where the populations are and the infrastructure is to support that. It's harder to build in the rural communities, although we're starting to see projects being permitted in the rural areas outside of Portland, suburban areas more so than rural, Westbrook, Scarborough, and Cumberland, Falmouth, that we're seeing more multifamilies being built, which is a good thing because it'll help moderate the price increases in rent, which we've already seen some moderations in those. I don't think they're going up in Portland as they were when there was no inventory. Now there's a lot of inventory built and being built, which is a good thing because it'll help at all levels of the rental market. It'll make availability more appropriate and pricing more appropriate.
Erin, I understand you just finished a big project in Brewer. Tell me about that project and tell me about the difference between working on a big development project in a place like Brewer versus a place like Portland.
Okay, well, thank you, Jennifer. The 48-unit project in Brewer is called Village Center, and it's a 48-unit affordable project for working families. So it's a mixture of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments. And it was the first new construction apartment building in Brewer in 20 years. So we had a lot of pent-up demand there. The apartment building is full. We had every unit leased before construction was complete. And we have a waiting list of about 200 households looking for housing up there. So it was a redevelopment of an old school site. We bought the land from the city of Brewer, and they were really instrumental and a part of the construction project. So we had a big site. We had a lot of laydown space. We didn't have to stop traffic. You know, there are a lot of things you bump up against in the city of Portland. Small, tight in-town sites, no place to lay down. You need to stop traffic in order to move materials across the road. So it was easier in lots of ways.
David, I started the program by talking about the record that was set last year in Maine home sales. And we say a record, but we've been keeping the record for 18 years. So the best in 18 years. But I'm wondering, what's behind that? Why were 12% more homes sold in Maine in 2016 than the year before?
Well, Jennifer, great question. Number one, momentum that's been in the market the last few years. I mean, we came out of the downturn of 2008 and in about 2012 began to slowly recover. And I think it was sort of a perfect storm with low rates. Rates dropped to about 3.5% in the residential market for a typical 30-year loan. And they stayed that way from May till right after the election. They bumped up a bit, but they've sort of settled down at 4.25%. So historical low. I think consumer confidence is back. The jobs are a little bit, industry is more stable. People just have more confidence about making big decisions and purchasing homes. So homes, condos, multifamilies, as Paul has referenced, all on the rise. I think it was just shy of about 19,500 homes statewide here in Cumberland County, about 25% of that activity, 5,200 homes sold in Cumberland County.
What was interesting to me is that, and I know there's different ways to measure it, but I'm looking at the number of homes sold 2015 to 2016, mm-hmm. up in every single county.
Yes.
Yes. You know, the price of homes went down in three counties, but still, even those counties, the price didn't go down significantly. That this is not a Portland phenomenon.
No, it's happening statewide. I mean, we see a more robust market in Portland, but there's little pockets. You've got Bangor, Brewer, Midcoast, Camden, Rockland. Resort communities, Rangeley, Sugarloaf, all throughout the state. I mean, it's things are good. Things are good.
Paul, what is the MERIDA, am I pronouncing it right, index? I know that's an acronym. Tell me about the MERIDA index and why it matters.
Several years ago, 3 years ago, the MERIDA board decided that they needed to do something about measuring the real estate community and how the real estate market was.
And the MERIDA board is the Maine Real Estate and Development Association board?
It is, yeah, our board. So our board wanted some measure of how things were. So we were working with Charlie Kogan at the Mussey School at USM, and he was really excited about it, and he got a bunch of his students to help him develop the index. Components of the index include residential market, commercial market, workforce, how the workforce is. And so we have a composite of various different segments of the real estate market, and he comes up with a number that is measured against, I think the baseline is 2006, which was very, very high. And so we've been measuring that quarterly now for the last 3 years. And Charlie's done a great job, and we just announced that at our forecast conference about 2 weeks ago that it was very, very high, almost, I think, the second highest quarter we've ever had. The quarter before was a little higher, and we're approaching the 2006 number, the baseline number, which was high. We're a little lower than that. So the index is showing that the market is strong throughout all segments. The residential sector really was the highest, and that really drove the number up. The number came down a little bit quarter to quarter because what we're seeing is a worker shortage. And so with the worker shortage, we're seeing pricing increases and less income generated by workers as a total because there's less workers. We're having people retire. As we all know, we're the oldest state in the nation. And our workforce is the oldest as far as our construction workers. And they're retiring at a very fast pace, and they're not being replaced at the same pace they're retiring. So we're having wage pressure that's impacting all segments of the real estate market.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, Aaron. You know, you said that there's a waiting list of 200 people for your just open development in Brewer. How does the shortage of construction workers affect your ability to maybe create new housing? And I should ask you, is that the biggest factor? Are there other factors as well?
I would say it's not the biggest factor, but it is a big factor, and it's a big enough factor that everybody in the real estate market understands that it has an impact. And I'll just explain to you how it impacts us both on the for rent on the market side and on the affordable side, which is subsidized and subject to different market influences. But as recently as 3 years ago, when we take a project out to bid, when we had contractors knocking on the door all the time, wanting to introduce themselves, wanting to be on our bid list, and we took a very nice condominium project in Portland out to bid last summer. And, you know, we talked to quite a few companies. We picked our select bid group. And when we actually came to the bid date, we have two of them say, you know what, we just can't do it. We're too busy. So, you know, it's more competition for the same workers in all of the same trades, you know, whatever general contract you get, they're all going out to the same pool of subcontractors who are going out to the same labor pool. So if you have lots of construction going on like we do in Portland right now, there's lots of competition for the same folks to actually do the work. So it is getting more expensive and it's getting more difficult to get things done.
Is it also driving up the costs of projects?
It definitely is.
Okay. David, how does the tourist economy influence real estate?
Ooh, yeah. Maine has always been vacation land, so I think of it in sort of broad terms, and then I'll narrow it down to Greater Portland. So broad terms, those pockets that I reference, whether it's mid-coast, inland skiing, all throughout the southern coast from York to sort of Brunswick area, people come to Maine to vacation, enjoy, and many of them purchase second homes. But I think really there's been a game changer in the greater Portland market the last 10 to 15 years. The food scene, the craft beer scene, and also people can bring their jobs with them. So 15 years ago, I might have a client that comes to Portland and said, David, I want to move to Portland, quality of life, my family, schools, et cetera, but I got to find a job. Today, they're bringing their job so they can commute to wherever the home office is, anywhere in the world, but make Portland their home. So it's changing. So those, I guess to come back full circle to answer your question, those tourists may be coming permanent residents, or if not, second homes here in Maine, but they see Maine as a six-month viable place to live, at least, if not year-round, when they were originally just vacationing here.
You know, they really the market is coming back in the second home. My company built a lot of condos at Sugarloaf in the past, the Timbers project, and we built strong from 03 to 07, and we shut down because the market collapsed. And 2 years ago, the markets came back, and the market at Sugarloaf and Sunny River is strong. It's not as strong as it was, but it's strong. The people are buying. Massachusetts people come up and buy in Maine still. I'm not sure they stay here year-round because our tax structure is prohibitively expensive for anybody to relocate to Maine. And with our new tax that's coming online, 3% increase in taxes of income to over $200,000, there'll be fewer people coming to Maine full-time. They will leave when the IRS requires them to leave, so they're not going to be taxed as a Maine resident.
But they still might buy property and just be here 6 months shy one day per year.
Yes, for sure, because Maine has so much to offer with our lakes and our mountains and our ocean and our lack of traffic and our lack of crime.
It's driven by quality of life, absolutely. As Paul said, they came here, they enjoyed the vacation, they realized, hey, we could live here. But what I'm seeing on the residential side, a more thoughtful home purchase, a little bit more, you know, prudent, a little more conservative, where they're not leveraging a big line of equity out of their previous home elsewhere and saying, great, I'll buy it, you know. They're thinking, all right, how will I use this? How will my family use it? And it's a quality of life decision. Like, this is a place we can gather. It's happening throughout the state.
I would say it has a big impact on affordability. Just looking at our coasts, you know, our islands, mm-hmm. communities where folks who maybe came for a couple weeks a year and then rented their house out year-round as they spend more and more time in Maine, they don't want to rent those homes, and it's harder for folks to find year-round rentals on the islands and in the coastal communities. Mm-hmm. So there are more folks commuting from farther away to those jobs in the coastal communities.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to turn to the news you can use kind of segment of this conversation, which is a lot of us have heard that mortgage interest rates are likely to go up. Does this mean that it's a great time to sell if I'm thinking about selling, or maybe the calculation isn't that straightforward, David?
So I'll definitely grab that one. So rates right now, as I say, typical 30-year rate is hovering around 4.25. Still historically incredibly low. They dropped to 3.5 this year, all this summer. I think that was a 40-year low. So I got my first loan in 1989. I paid 13.5% interest, and I was psyched. You know, my seller paid down points so I could get that rate. I refinanced a few years later under 10%. Unbelievable. So if you put it in perspective, rates are incredibly low. Bottom line for most homeowners, how much can I afford per month? So you run the numbers. You don't have to have 20% down. Banks are easing regulations. So there's great programs as little as 3.5% down. Vets, rural development, 100% financing. So it's about affordability. What works for you, customer, and we'll help you find it. So there's a lot of great loan options out there, and the banks are eager to lend money to anyone with reasonable credit and reasonable job history.
What about, and I know because I know the demographics of Maine, if you're somebody who's maybe approaching retirement or in retirement and thinking about downsizing, how do you think about when might be the right time looking at the finances and the potential rise in interest rates and other things? How do you figure out when is the right time? How do you make that calculation in February of 2017?
There's no perfect formula. It's really about, you know, that individual and what works well for their life. And are they using the big home? And would it be more affordable to downsize? In most instances, I would say yes. If it's a single or two people living alone in a, you know, 2,500 square foot house, they can make a lateral move to a much smaller house, reduce their overhead, perhaps reduce their taxes and operating costs, and have the same quality of life with more long-term sort of cash available. That's my short answer.
Aaron?
So I think it depends a lot on where you are, because that's the ideal situation. And most folks, you know, recognize for themselves when the right time is. Mm-hmm. The question is, can you sell your house? And if you have to sell your house to buy something else you want, smaller, you want a condominium, you don't want to mow the lawn anymore, you don't want to snow blow anymore, you know, the question is, can you sell it? So it's, I would say it's a good time when the market's hot to be selling, because some of this pent up demand.
Would you recommend, Aaron, though, that they have bought something else before they sell?
I think that's totally an individual decision. I mean,
but if the market's hot, there's no guarantee that there'll be something waiting for you, right?
To buy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's always that balance. But if you can't put anything under contract with a contingency that you sell your own home first, you may not be able to buy without selling.
And in this, go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, it's interesting what's happened over the last 20 years with housing. There's been a lot of suburban growth, big houses, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000-foot houses. Well, that's not what people really want now. People really want more modern, smaller homes. So I wonder what the market's going to be like in the next 5-10 years for that big suburban house in the subdivision. How's that going to sell?
My gut, get out now, because the Gen Xers and the millennials, you know, they don't want the big house. About 2,500-2,600 square feet on a national basis, that's about the cap that they're looking for. So you live in a 3,000-plus square foot home and you're an empty nester, it may be time to make a shift.
Such an interesting conversation. We have to go to a break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio, the revolution that is changing how we think about thinking.
One of their great discoveries is that people don't make clean, clear choices between things.
Michael Lewis on the mind-opening research of Danny Kahneman and Amos Tversky. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Join us for Freakonomics Radio starting this Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is a media sponsor of Portland Ovation's classical series, including the Handel and Haydn Society performing Glories of the Italian Baroque. The Boston-based ensemble will perform works by Locatelli, Vivaldi, and more at Hannaford Hall on the University of Southern Maine's Portland campus, Saturday afternoon, February 11th. Maine Public members are eligible for 10% off tickets. For details on the event and how to take advantage of the Maine Public member discount, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine's real estate market. In the studio with me, David Marsden, an associate broker with the Bean Group, who specializes in residential, condominium, and multifamily properties. Paul Peck is the president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association and an attorney with Drummond & Drummond. And Aaron Cooper-Ryder is development director at Community Housing of Maine and the president of the board of directors of the Genesis Community Loan Fund. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to the calls, I want to circle back to something we were talking about before the break, which is interest rates and how high they'll go before they really make an impact on the market. We were mainly talking about residential home sales, but Paul, you say very different in the development sector.
I think it is different in the development sector. When you're penciling out a deal, interest rates are a huge part. Cost of funds are a huge part of your deal. And, you know, 1% interest rate increase will make an impact. And if rents aren't going up any longer in town, which I don't think they are, and I think it's going to pencil out poor deals, which isn't a bad thing. You know, it's a natural environment what happens when you have a growth time and it recedes at some point or reaches a point where, you know, this deal may not work because interest rates are up. And that's okay. So good deals will always work, I think. Good deals in good locations will be good even if rates go up. But maybe poor deals or deals that are a little more shaky that might stop that deal from happening, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
We talked about how it seems to be the Portland, and I don't mean the greater Portland, I mean the city of Portland, the market seems to be on fire for these projects. I know that there are a lot more that haven't even broken ground yet. Could those all stop on a dime if interest rates go up? Not the ones under construction, but those planned. And how much would it take for that to happen?
I think it won't stop all the deals on a dime. But if rates continue to go up, if there's a 2-point increase in interest rates, that will stop some deals. But right now, we've gone up maybe a half point to a point. I don't think that's going to hurt any of the good deals.
All right. We're going to start with Lisa in Albion. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, what guidance could be offered in finding a good realtor? I've had my home listed with several different realtors. Two of them never themselves actually showed the house. And the other one put just inordinate pressure to show the house all the time using guilt trips and everything that they could do to get us to show the house. And neither of those, you know, are very comfortable for the homeowner, and nor do they sell the house. So I guess I've been picking wrong. I've chosen realtor. So
okay, anyway. David is going to help you here.
Lisa, Dave Morrison, I'm a residential broker, and I'm sorry to hear there's great brokers in Maine, and there's some not so good brokers, and it sounds like you've had a tough road. You're in the driver's seat. You control your options. So if you don't like what's happening, you need to tell your broker, and if they can't make it right, you need to find another choice. I would interview at least three brokers. I would look at what they have been selling and with whom. I'd ask for some personal recommendations from any of their clients and do a little bit more due diligence. National Association of Realtors say 89% of consumers work with the first agent that gets back to them. And I sort of laugh at that. So you don't have to be good. You have to be fast. Well, baloney. I think you've got to be both in this, and you have to be respectful and listen to your client's needs and make it happen on their terms. So if you're not getting the love you want, fire your broker, find another one.
Lisa, thanks for your call. And I'm sure your question is one that is shared by a lot of listeners today. We're going to go to Surrey and Leslie. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, we have a problem that I think many people down east can relate to. We moved here from out of state years ago and weren't aware of the arsenic problem up here. We have arsenic in our well to a great degree. It's a very serious problem, and it was not disclosed to us, and I was making baby formula for an infant when we moved here with it. We were thinking of downsizing soon because we're going to be empty nesters, and I wondered how people handle this normally in a house sale when they've got something like this in their home.
Hi, this is Paul Peck, and although I am president of the Maine Real Estate Development Association, I'm an attorney, and I know that you're going to have to probably disclose that, and you may need to get a whole house system to deal with your water issues. I mean, if you disclose that, which you probably have to, people are going to be hesitant to buy the house unless there's a system put in place that will clean the water, and someone's going to have to pay for that.
Good luck, Leslie. We'll move to Portland and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Sloan House is a nonprofit that helps mental health people in Portland, and it used to provide housing for the mentally ill. And when Genesis obtained the mortgages for the different houses, they required Shalom to rent to all of the different minorities. So that organization needs to form a separate corporation for their housing. But my question is, I don't think Elizabeth Noyes meant for the Genesis to force that onto groups like Shalom, and I'd like to know why Shalom does that.
Can you address that?
Yeah, I can. So, hi, this is Erin Cooper-Ryder, and I think Jennifer said earlier in the show that I do sit on the board of directors of the Genesis Fund, so I can say with confidence that the Genesis Fund does not impose restrictions like the one you described, but they do sound to me a little bit like fair housing requirements that are actually imposed by federal law. And I'm looking at Paul here. Does that sound right to you?
It does.
Thank you, Nancy, for your call. We're going to move to Brooke, who's calling from Cumberland. Hi, Brooke. Go ahead.
You guys had any information surrounding the demographics of folks who are moving from out of state. My husband and I moved from Brooklyn, New York. We're millennials to Cumberland. My sister just moved to Falmouth, also a millennial, and we have friends that also just moved from Brooklyn to Saco. So I just was wondering if we happen to be just a small kind of microcosm or if there are any larger shifts of people coming from out of state, from cities particularly, or if you have any of that information.
Brooke, it's such an interesting question, and I saw something this a couple weeks ago I hadn't seen before. I saw Portland referred to as Portlyn, L-Y-N, because so many people had moved from Brooklyn. So yep. We're nodding here. Do we have numbers, or is this all anecdotal?
Well, I'll take a shot at that. Hi, Brooke. David, residential broker. So the millennials, you guys, your average age, I'm speaking on a broad-based national sort of statistics here. Median age is 30. You have out surpassed baby boomers as far as the largest segment of the market on the move. About 35% of all home buyers are millennials or are Gen Ys right now. So I put it to you, why did you move to Maine? Why did your sister move to Maine? Was it quality of life? Was it better sort of life for the family? What brought it you here?
So we both have young children. We both feel very strongly about educating kids in public schools. And also, I think from a pricing perspective in Brooklyn, what we are paying in rent is what we are about paying for a mortgage on a 3,000-foot square house from 1799. And the other funny thing is that you guys had mentioned earlier about just the interest in kind of smaller, more modern homes. All three couples who have just moved from Brooklyn, we've all purchased either houses from 1799 or the mid-1800s.
And wow. That's very old for Maine. But, David, when she was giving her reasons for moving here, you were not surprised at all, were you?
I was like, that was beautiful, Brooke. Thank you. I couldn't have scripted it. You just took the words out of my mouth. Those very reasons that you described is what I hear from clients and consumers as they consider a move to Maine. So thank you for being honest, and I think you nailed it. You have many, whether it's New York, Brooklyn, any major metro market around the country, and I'm also seeing it, you know, people from around the world choosing to live in Greater Portland for many of those reasons.
Brooke, thanks for your call. We have a couple emails that are related, so I'm going to try to find both of these here. This is from Max. He writes, do you see outer towns such as Buxton, Gorham, and Windham expanding as Westbrook and Portland reach capacity? And then somebody from Hollowell posted on Facebook, what prospects do your panelists see for central Maine communities, including Augusta, Hollowell, Farmingdale, Gardner, and Richmond, to attract residents from southern Maine who can easily commute to Greater Portland but may find a more affordable housing market in central Maine? Erin?
I see it happening. I see both things happening. We did a project in Westbrook in 2008. I think we finished it up, and we were several years in the making, so finding a piece of land to build there affordably was not difficult to do, and now it's hard to do in Westbrook. And as it becomes more hard to do affordably the closer you get to Portland, I think things will move out. And I think central Maine, you know, there's a lot of pressure there. And again, as land costs rise in southern Maine, folks are going to be looking farther afield for really good opportunities.
You know, I talked earlier about suburban areas, and I wasn't only talking about Portland and its suburbs. Bangor is seeing an increase in conversion of older office buildings or older retail buildings in the city core, turning into apartments. Augusta on Water Street, same thing's happening. Gardner whatever Main Street is in Gardner, where all those beautiful brick buildings is. It's happening in Gardner. It's happening in Gorham. There's a new bowling alley with apartments above being built, being permitted there in Gorham. Westbrook obviously having a lot, but all around the state in the urban areas, things are happening. And in the rural areas, it's more difficult.
We have an email from Kristen. Are people buying traditional bed and breakfast properties, or are they buying up properties to create Airbnb empires? And I should note that on Friday, we're doing a Maine Calling program on short-term rentals. So if you're interested in this, come back.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is Erin. Yeah, I'll tackle it first, just to say that the whole question of Airbnb regulation and use comes up in every community that we've worked in. It's an ongoing conversation. Every community is taking slightly different approach to it. It's certainly a factor when you're developing a condominium. You know, the question is, what are you going to allow? And so I've seen the approach taken that the homeowners association says, okay, no short-term rentals under 3 months. And it's certainly a question that condo buyers are asking. You know, who is my neighbor going to be? Someone who's here all the time or somebody new every night?
Priscilla on Facebook asks, what incentives exist to construct housing, particularly affordable or senior housing, in our old mill structures? Winthrop has a mill in which housing was promised for a TIF, and the mill owner has claimed there are not adequate incentives to make it happen.
So affordable housing is slightly different beast than market rate housing. And so the tool that we have to create new units of affordable housing everywhere nationwide is the low-income housing tax credit. And it's a competitive process. The projects are all proposed and scored. It happens once a year, the allocation. And it's, you know, unless it's a service center community that has all of these other sort of high scoring criteria, it's hard to do. So that doesn't mean that something couldn't be done there and something couldn't be done that's slightly below market rate using other subsidies like the historic tax credit, which potentially the mill is a potential site for use.
So it's
of that
easier,
credit.
Augusta would be easier to get the funding for than Winthrop, even though they're very close to each other.
Yes.
Yep. All right. On that note, we have to take another break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Maine Calling Possible, as does Maine College of Health Professions, offering real-world training in nursing, radiology, and nuclear medicine. mchp.edu.
We constantly strive to bring you the best of what is possible on public radio. Public radio is because listeners like you value it and recognize the importance of supporting the service to ensure that it continues to be a valued listening option. So please support your public radio station during our one-day on-air campaign, February 9th, also known as Super Thursday. If you've never supported public radio before but find you're listening more than ever and it's more important than ever, please do your part. Join listeners everywhere who keep this tradition alive. Thank you.
Climate One is changing the conversation about energy, economy, and the environment. Our next program explores the future of oil and nuclear power. It's been 10 years since California passed its pioneering climate law, and the state recently announced plans to close its last remaining nuclear power plant. So what's the future of clean energy in California and beyond? Join our host Greg Dalton for the next Climate One.
Tune in this afternoon at 2 o'clock in just 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the commercial and residential real estate outlook for 2017, plus answers to your questions about real estate. In the studio with me, Paul Peck, president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, David Marsden, an associate broker with the Bean Group, Aaron Cooper-Ryder, development director at Community Housing of Maine. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And I should say that those are abbreviated titles for all three of you because you all do so many different things. Anyway, so we have lots of good questions. We're going to go to Wendy, who's calling from Carabasset Valley. Hi, Wendy. Go ahead.
Hi. Let me take you off speakerphone here.
Yes, please.
Hi there. I was calling in with regard to the type of homes that people are trending towards and the woman who called in about the arsenic in the water.
Right.
I've been a real estate agent for 30 years, and I'm switching my focus to building biology and ecology with a specialization in electromagnetic fields and radiation, as far as healthy housing all the way around, which is newer housing and the older homes that the people were speaking of are also very good in that regard. Paul Peck's aware of this trend, I think. And as far as choosing a real estate agent, which people have also spoken about, I've found that people are not always aware of all the aspects of a home. And having been in the business for 30 years and a certified home inspector as well, it's really important when somebody's buying a home to know the product that they're buying.
All right. Wendy, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
We have a Facebook post. I currently own a condo in the West End, and that would be Portland, I guess, which I purchased in cash. I'm looking to buy a second income property and leveraging my existing condo. Is it possible to take out a loan using an existing property towards purchasing a new one? David, there are all sorts of ways to do this, aren't there?
Absolutely. My first thought would be to take your cash, if you plan on keeping the existing condo, you could do two things. One, get a mortgage on it, or two, a line of equity. That'll give you the capital to go and purchase something else. You know, if you have the ability not to take out a loan and you can use other capital and just get a traditional loan on the next property or the second, even better, because then your first asset will continue to bring in good cash flow. But my sense is, why tie up all your cash or your eggs in one basket? Why not diversify and have a portfolio of homes with using leverage of loans or line of equity against them? Don't over leverage yourself. I'm a conservative Yankee, so have a cash reserve, but also leverage your assets.
It's an interesting question, I think, because what I found in my experiences through the law and through real estate development is a lot of real estate developers started out buying a two-family home, living in it, fixing it up, renting it, and then moving out maybe and buying another two-family home, living in it, fixing it up, renting it. And that's where they started. And
that's the path that I took, Paul. I bought my first two-family in Westbrook, in 1989, and never lived in a single family until I was over 40 years old. So I continue to leverage each of those assets. I've kept them in my portfolio and kind of kept going.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because I know a lot of people are interested in doing just that, especially a lot of young people. There aren't as many of those for sale as there used to be, are there? And there's not as much potential because the prices are pretty high now. I mean, in 1989, that was probably – how much did you pay?
$126,000.
Okay. That would not be $126,000 today. No. Would it be worth,
In 2007, I think we sold it for $245,000.
Okay.
I think the market in Portland is very high when it comes to multifamily, at least on the peninsula.
Yes.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of activity happening right now in Biddeford and in Saco and the outlying communities and in Bangor and Waterville in the area. I mean, Waterville's really hot right now with what Colby's doing. It's very exciting. Lots of development is happening right now and proposed. So there are opportunities, maybe not on the peninsula in Portland for a young person who wants to get into a two-family, but definitely in Biddeford, definitely in Saco, definitely in Bangor and Gardner. There's opportunity out there to buy two families.
Okay.
Everybody doesn't have to live in the peninsula.
And in Portland, off the peninsula.
Off the peninsula. Yes. Okay.
Deering, Rosemont, Westbrook, all of the surrounding communities. Absolutely.
Okay. Aaron, maybe you're the one to answer this. What about Brunswick? What effect did the base housing coming open have on that market? Some people were really worried that it would tamp down the value of their homes. Has it done that, or has it had a different kind of effect?
I don't think it has done that. I'm sort of looking at Paul here because I don't know that I have enough personal experience with Brunswick. But we looked hard at Brunswick and sort of said, oh, there's so much becoming available. We're gonna wait and see. And I would say there's lots of exciting things happening in Brunswick now, and downtown Brunswick's new communities or new businesses coming in and opening up. And I think demand has gone up, and I don't think property values have been hurt.
Brunswick is very strong. There's actually a multifamily apartment building being built on Main Street near the train station.
Yep.
It's probably one of the first apartment buildings built in that area in 20 years at least. So that's exciting. The base closure on the commercial sector had an impact because the pricing on the base is lower than the pricing off the base, and the facilities on the base are really strong. So you've seen a lot of businesses either relocate to the base, start at the base, and that's been really good for the base. The outlining strip malls and areas off the base have having to compete with that. So that's an interesting. The housing market, I'm not an expert in the Brunswick housing market, but I think it's absorbed all that housing very well.
Yeah.
And it was needed. We need new housing everywhere. We have the oldest housing stock or the second oldest housing stock in the country in this state, and we need new housing.
An email from Jessica. Last year, I unfortunately had to help my parents move into assisted living. I'm now in the process of cleaning out their Portland property. Any direction on the pros and cons of renting versus selling?
It may be a great time to rent. It depends on your situation, your parents' long-term situation, and also maintenance that's, you know, sort of inevitable of the house. So I think there's not a quick answer, but if you feel comfortable managing, that process, I think in the short term, for the next 3 to 5 years, rental could be good as long as there are no big capital issues, i.e. roof, boiler, things like that, that would offset any, profit you may make.
I would say you should talk to a lawyer or at least go online, find a good lease. You want a good lease if you're going to rent a house, especially if you're just a single renter. You've never rented anything else. You should get a lease. You should probably have your house inspected by a qualified home inspector, too. You want to watch out for any old systems, dangerous areas, lead. There's issues that you should address.
Maine Landlord Association is a great resource for many of that.
We have an email from Betty. Would your panel have any suggestions for current marketing points in rural parts of Maine? Having had a farm property for sale in northern Franklin County for the past 2 years, I have found the rural areas simply are not in high demand. We have listed it with a reputable broker, Maine Farmland Trust, FarmLink website, print ads, local TV coverage, etc.
It sounds like they've done everything right.
Yeah, I would agree.
What we have seen, though, in the state is a growth in farming, which is really exciting. People coming from out of state who can buy land fairly cheap and grow crops and grow cattle or grow pigs or chickens and this whole back to the land. And I think this is happening all around the country probably, but Maine, we have wonderful land, fairly cheap prices in the rural areas, good clean water, and I think that's exciting, really exciting. You see the Amish community, I think it's the Amish community, in Aroostook County growing, and they're doing that because we have great land, great water, and they can live their lives in the country setting. So I think you're going to see that, but isolated areas, it's hard to sell stuff. You got to find that person who wants to own a farm.
You need to find one person, right?
Just one.
Just one. Isn't that one of the sayings in real estate? An email from Joan. Is there any hope of new housing in Augusta for aging baby boomers who no longer want to deal with the responsibility of a home? I'm talking about housing, not for the poor nor for the upper middle class, but for people at approximately 80% of the median income. So far, there's an incredible dearth of such developments! Exclamation point.
That's a tough one. It's tough because there isn't that 80 to 100%, the rents, if we're talking about rental housing, or the sale price if we're talking about ownership, are slightly below market. And there isn't any financing or subsidy program available to buy down either the construction cost or the maintenance cost to that level. So it is tough to produce.
There is new apartments being rehabilitated and converted from commercial space on Water Street. And that's exciting. Water Street's beautiful. The architecture on Water Street is amazing. There's more restaurants down there near the brand new courthouse, near on the river. It's gorgeous. And she should look on Water Street.
I own one rental property. This is an email from Rod. I own one rental property not far from Woodford's Corner in Portland. I struggle with how much to raise rent. I have no desire to raise rents to the sky, but obviously want to maximize return, so it's always a balancing act. I have been stunned by the discrepancy between rents, much, much higher in the East and West Ends, and rents in my neighborhood, which is only about a mile away. Any comments on this phenomenon and whether the rents in that part of Portland might rise to get closer to East and West Ends?
So it's Ron, is it? So
Rod.
Rents off the peninsula versus on are always a little bit softer. So my units, I have both, and they're always higher on the peninsula. So that being said, maybe a 2 to 3 bedroom off peninsula in the Woodfords, sort of Back Cove area, you're looking, you know, on average 1300 to 1400, I would say, modestly in sort of Class B condition. If it's Class A, it would be higher. Class C would be lower. So use your judgment. Look on Craigslist, get a sense of the market, what's going, and, you know, work with your tenants. Rent isn't the only answer when you're looking for a quality tenant. So screen your people, have a good lease, as Paul indicates, and be reasonable with them because they're helping to pay your mortgage.
We'll go to Peg, who's calling from Lewiston, Auburn. Hi, Peg. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. I'm just calling to express my concern that I rarely hear on the program about the community I've lived in for over 40 years. I feel like the voices that are part of the panel, not very often do I hear people who understand what a wonderful place Lewiston, Auburn is.
Okay, Peg, we'll take that. We'll talk about that, and I appreciate you calling in. It is a call-in program, and we look for input. What is going on with real estate in Lewiston, Auburn area?
There's stuff going on in Lewiston, Auburn. There's on Lisbon Street, there's a redevelopment of a lot that I think is going to be affordable housing through a LIHTC deal. There's some conversion of some of the bigger buildings in Lewiston to housing. The Lewiston Auburn's beautiful. The riverfront's beautiful. The Bates Mill complex is amazing. There's apartments in the Bates Mill complex, low-income tax credit deal that Nathan Zanton did, and those are affordable rents. And there's restaurants there. Lewiston Auburn has beautiful architecture, beautiful river, great people, hardworking people, and it's happening there because it is an urban center, and it's happening in all the urban centers.
Thanks for your call, Peg. And we're going to go to Waterboro and Brian.
Hi, yes. My question was, so our realtor, he showed us a bunch of stuff in South Portland, Portland area, and then he's like, just take a ride with me out to Lake Arrowhead. So we did, and what we were able to get out in Lake Arrowhead was obviously a lot cheaper and in newer construction, so it was a good fit for us. But then the property or the piece of land right behind us went for sale. We bought it, And the question is, you know, it seems that that happens quite a bit at where I am, and I don't know if you see the same thing in other areas. And so obviously that's taking, you know, those parcels off, you know, offline. So is that contributing in some way, shape, and form to, you know, some of these other issues that we're talking about?
So you're talking about buying up an adjacent piece of land for yourself, yeah. But that means somebody else can't build on it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, Brian, this is David, the residential person. Highest and best use is what we talk about. And for you, maybe having an empty lot is highest and best use. I would feel that way if you know, and maybe when you go and sell, now you have two parcels. Keep that vacant parcel on a separate deed, and now you have options if and when you're ready to sell. You could sell the vacant lot separately. You could pool them together. Or you could sell your current home separately. So highest and best use, it depends on the current owner and then ultimately what's happening in the surrounding area. So I think that's a very, are people infill, like you look at places in Portland, South Portland, Westbrook, people are looking for smaller lots. Zoning is softening so that we can build and create higher density. That's a different thing. So the highest and best use may be more housing. But on Lake Arrowhead, it may be, you know, empty lots. Depends on a variety of issues.
Thanks, Brian. We're almost out of time, but I want to squeeze in one more call. Omar, you're on Main Calling, and if you could ask your question quickly, that would be wonderful.
Yes, hi. I bought a piece of land in Freeport last year. I would like to know where is the best place to go for a construction loan.
How do we think about where to go for a construction loan?
You should start with your local bank or who you have a relationship with. There's a lot of banks in Maine. They're all very qualified, and they all make, not all of them, but most of them make construction loans.
Okay. And you recommend a local bank?
I would recommend a local bank also.
All right. Well, thank you, Omar. Good luck to you. And that is going to do it. We are out of time. Thank you so much, all three of you, for being here. Erin Cooper-Ryder is Development Director at Community Housing of Maine, and she sits on lots of boards as well. Paul Peck, President of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, attorney with Drummond & Drummond and a real estate developer. And David Marsden, an associate broker with the Bean Group, who specializes in residential, condominium, and multifamily properties in the greater Portland area. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Maine's own Mallet Brothers Band takes on an unusual project. Their new record is a collection of 10 historic songs that they've brought up to date with their own arrangements and melodies. They're coming in and bringing some instruments. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.